Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the podcast that takes a light-hearted look at lesser-known London stories with your own personal blue badge professional tourist guides.
She's Fiona.
And she's Alex.
And this is the Ladies in London podcast. Hello, gang. Welcome back. It's Hello. Alex here.
And Fiona.
Hooray.
Alex, you can speak.
Hooray. I can speak. I have a whole voice. I have a whole Yay. Voice now, which is good. So I'm back. I'm back, baby. How are you?
Well, hey, I'm good. Yes, good. You know,
full of voice, vigour.
Full of voice, yeah, a certain amount of vigour. Yes.
The vigour is lacking for me, I have to say.
Yeah. Well, this time of year, it's kind of...
The vigour runs out, doesn't it?
It does a bit, but, you know, it'll return.
I have to say, I'm loving autumn. I'm loving it. Okay. Although I did just get a random, you know, weather... app alert thing that it's going to get warmer again next week. I'm like, no. Just give me nice, cool autumn temperatures. I'm happy with that.
No. You've got to have to put up with another whole weekend of glorious warm weather.
I'm such an Eeyore. It's funny because I went out my house the other night and it was maybe about 7 or 8 o'clock. And it got dark and it had that lovely autumnal smell. You know, when it smells cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if there's a word for that, but.
There probably is.
Probably a German word and it's really long. But it was that lovely smell of just cool air and cool ground and lovely. It was just really nice. Anyway, I digress. What have you been up to? Anything fun?
Oh, this and that. Mostly house related. Building works coming along. Light at the end of the tunnel.
Yay!
Done some painting.
Oh, you're having a tunnel built. That's very nice.
Yeah, we're having a tunnel. Maybe that's why it's taking so long. You know,
maybe. Just... Tunneling to France.
Yeah. So few little last minute hitches and discoveries, but you know,
as is the way.
Yeah.
Well, this week I did something really fun. I those of you who follow me on Instagram might know that I went to the opening of a new exhibition at the Imperial War Museum.
Oh yes.
Now I have to say so the museum is fantastic. I don't go that often, I have to say. It's not somewhere that I guide because I don't know it well enough. But all of their exhibitions are outstanding. I went to one, it must have been last year, which was War Games. And it was all about how kind of war has influenced gaming and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And this one is all about, it's called Spies, Deception and Lies. And it is incredible, and it's free, and it is all about they've taken about 100 years of spying history. So what they've done is they've picked out about 25 different stories and they've kind of woven them into this really quite interesting narrative. They haven't necessarily done it in chronological order. They do things like the Skripal poisonings, which are obviously quite recent, and that's sort of somewhere in the middle. And they do it more along themes of kind of, there's a theme of spy implements. There is literally a lipstick that was a spy camera.
Yes.
A classic, you know, a boom box with like recordings inside. It was some really cool stuff. Then it goes into kind of actual like deceptions of people and how they, you know, well, literally physically spying, I guess, the whole, you know, double agency type stuff. It's all in different bits and it is really, really interesting. There's propaganda and all sorts. And then when I went in, I hadn't quite thought about it as I went in. And then I part way and I was like, oh, hang on. I wonder if two of our favourites are in here. And I found a whole section on Operation Mincemeat, which, as listeners will know, is one of our most popular episodes and was very early on.
Yeah.
And also my personal hero or heroine, which is Noora Nayak Khan. She gets her own video. That's how amazing she is.
Yeah.
And on that note, there is actually a talk at the Imperial War Museum on Noora Nayak Khan on the 6th of November by Shrabani Basu, who, if you remember, that's the lady who wrote the book, Spy Princess, all about her. I am going. I have my tickets already. You can't make it, can you, Fee?
Have you asked me that already?
I think I asked you, and I think you said you couldn't make it. But yeah. Let's just check.
Say the date again.
6th of November.
I'm not sure. I might be able to.
Oh, okay. So we're thinking, but, well, I'm thinking, another little podcast outing. It's not that far away, so probably not many of you will be able to make it. But I'm going to go, and it includes after-hours admission to the Spies, Lies and Deception exhibition. Obviously, the exhibition is free, but it's an after-hours admission, so you'll get to go and have that too. And it will be basically in the Imperial War Museum after it's closed for the day. So I'm going to go to that. If anyone would like to come along, please let me know that you're coming, because I will be fangirling all over Shribani Basu for that.
Sounds marvellous.
And if Fiona can make it, I'm pretty sure I asked you, and you said you couldn't, but hey, if you can, even better.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm. It's all round about then at the moment. Everything's up in the air because it's sort of, we might sure. be moving back time. So, but yes.
I did ask Emily. Emily cannot make it because, you know, mm-hmm. boo. She's got something better to do, apparently, whatever. But yeah, anyone who does want to come, please come and join us. Yeah. And before, I'm sure you've got parish notices as well. Before we get onto them, just before I forget, because I know what my brain's like, another little parish notice from one of our other favourites, Mary Seacole. She has had a new commemorative coin made for her Ooh. By the Royal Mint. They're £5 coins. It's got the very famous portrait of her, which is the lovely black and white photo, not the painting, the photo of her on one side. And you can, if you're into kind of coins and all that sort of stuff, you can get this £5. It's a £5 coin, but they don't go for £5. They go from £15 up to £3,000 if you want the gold one. But it's really, really lovely. So if you fancy, you know, doing that, then I just thought I'd point that out. But I think I'm really enjoying how, obviously, we're leading the way here with this podcast, because we mention these people before they become, popular.
Obviously,
yes. We were there first. But I'm really enjoying how so many of them are being commemorated and recognised in the last couple of years.
Yes.
Which is really nice.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any parish notices?
Well, I finally sat down and dived into both the emails and the Instagram. And
well done, I still haven't.
Yeah, also apologies to, there's a few people who might have got in touch on Instagram and it took me a while to notice because I always forget that there's some that don't show up straight away as messages.
There's the requests bit, which is new requests.
I forget to look there. So in amongst lots of messages, there were three I just wanted to pick out particularly. One from Ellen, who said, "How wonderful to have you back." Very nice.
Thanks, Ellen.
One from Natalie, similar sort of vein, but the title of hers was just "Hooray!" with an exclamation mark.
I thought you were going to say that hers was just "Go away again."
No. And one from Marion, who I think might get the prize, because the title of hers was just "Woohoo!" four O's and four exclamation marks. You are a lady after our own hearts, Marion.
You are. Thank you very much, everyone. We are happy to be back.
Yes. And there's a couple of longer kind of things on my email that actually I I'm going to come back to them because I sort of read them but didn't quite take enough note of them. So I'll come back to them next week.
I will endeavour to do something. I'm going on holiday in week after next. So I might try and take some time to read some things and respond to stuff then as well. Because right now my brain space is really quite limited still.
Yeah.
It's surprising that, you know, you sort of assume you're going to be absolutely fine immediately and then you're very much not. But anyway.
Time is good, isn't it? Yes. things take longer.
Time is good. Holidays are better.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's your week this week.
Right.
Where are we going? You haven't told me what you're doing this week. You just sent me a rather cryptic message going straight after the last episode, going, "I've already got my topic." And hello.
Yeah. So I was.
Is it Christopher Wren's really? Nope. One of his set squares. Nope. Is that what we're doing?
No. Pre-Wren.
Pre-Wren. Yeah.
Okay. I was just thinking. So I was putting together the pictures for the blog last week. So right. The Boy Jones, yep. Buckingham Palace. There's no pictures of the Boy Jones breaking.
No.
So I found a picture of Buckingham Palace at the right time, and I've tried to find a map to see where the prison was, the Bridewell, the what's it called? My name has gone
not
blank.
Bridewell. Yeah,
Tothill Street Bridewell is what it was called. Yeah. In one of the images I found that marked that on was a map of a 1631 survey of the Grosvenor estate. So if you go back to last week's blog, you can have a little look at this. And it had the buildings in three-dimensional. I do love a three-dimensional sort of building on a map. And looking towards Buckingham Palace, as if you were looking kind of along St. James's Park towards it, the closest building on the left was a little house drawn on the map 3D called Tart Hall.
Oh, that sounds like my dream home.
Well, obviously, instantly I thought, well, who would live in a building like that?
Very good Lloyd Grossman impression.
And so I did a bit of reading and I found who lived in a building like that. And it was a lady she started off as Alethea Talbot.
Great name.
And her eventual titles, she married into the Howard family.
Ah, so, now is this the Howard family?
Quite possibly. It's one of those families with a lot of
tentacles. Yeah.
Lots and lots of tentacles. And that's the thing. I haven't found any details of what Alethea's character was like, what her, you know, personality or things like that. But I found a lot of stuff about things she did.
Was she a tart?
And she knew a lot of people.
Oh, okay. I'm in.
So strap yourselves in. There's a lot of name dropping coming up. So even just with her, she was Alethea Howard, 14th Baroness Talbot, 17th Baroness Strange of Blackmere, 13th Baroness Furnival, Countess of Arundel.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, there should be more of a full stop. The end. Countess of Arundel. That was the end.
I mean, that's a pretty hefty thing to put on your letterhead, isn't it?
It's a good list of, yeah. So, and she's the daughter of the Earl of Shrewsbury and the granddaughter of Bess of Hardwick.
Ooh.
So instantly we're talking, well, Bess of Hardwick pops up in sort of, you know, Tudor era.
Yeah. Now, I don't think we've ever spoken about Bess of Hardwick on the pod, but I do know that she is on one of my long lists of possible topics.
Yes. So well, maybe we should come back to her then, because there's all sorts of interesting stuff that she did. She and her husband looked after Mary, Queen of Scots, when she was in prison for a bit and things. The most sizable impact she has on Alethea's life is that Alethea inherits a third of the Hardwick estate, which included vast swathes of Derbyshire and Yorkshire and, you know, Chatsworth House and Hardwick Hall and huge amounts. And one of the things Alethea did with that money is she and her husband, we'll come back to him in a moment, bought stuff. They did the grand tour, kind of, you know, this is early 1600s, so they are
trailblazers
in this. And he is sometimes known as the Collector Earl. And amongst other things, she inherited from him when he died 600 paintings and drawings by Titian, Bruegel, Holbein, Rubens,
what?
Rembrandt, etc.
Wowzers.
And there is a rather nice painting of him, Thomas Howard, by Rubens, looking very kind of modern. It's one of those ones with a sort of open neck shirt and not a lot of clothes. I mean, I'm not saying scantily clad. I'm just saying the picture doesn't go down far enough to show his clothing.
And steady on.
Three-quarter angle. Just looks very contemporary, kind of. More delightfully, there is a picture which is of her painted when she was living in Antwerp, again by Rubens. And it's her and the jester and her dog and various other people from her household. And then apparently at some point later, some other hand has added in her husband in the background.
Oh, brilliant.
And you can clearly see when you look at it that he does, like, he's not as well done as the rest of them.
Oh, really?
And it's just fabulous that he's just kind of photobombed this portrait. I love it. By Rubens. So he was, brace yourselves, another set of titles coming up. And with him, quite a lot of doubt about the numbers. So he was the Earl of Arundel, but he was either the second.
This is not Arundel in Frozen, though. This is...
No, Arundel, Surrey.
Sorry, yeah.
I'm going to say, sorry.
Dorset, possibly.
Dorset, maybe.
I came past it on the train the other week on the way to Bognor, and yeah, with the lovely big castle. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make that point. That totally non-fictional place.
Yes. Yeah, definitely not from a fairy tale. But he's either the 2nd, 14th, or 21st Earl of Arundel, depending how you count them.
Okay.
He's the 2nd or 4th Earl of Surrey, and probably the 5th, I lost track by that point, Earl of Norfolk.
Okay.
And one of their grandchildren becomes Duke of Norfolk, so they get upgraded from an Earl to a Duke. And the Duke of Norfolk is the head of the College of Arms, the person who still has to organise all things like the coronation and stuff. Yeah. So the Duke of Norfolk, we know that post kind of going forwards to nowadays.
Same family,
I think. Yeah, as far as I know. Yeah. And he was a courtier and a sort of diplomat and things in the early Stuarts, so James I, Charles I's court. And amongst various bits of travelling and things he did, he escorted Marie de Medici home in 1641. She had been in England and she was escorted home. And then in 1642, he accompanied, and I think Alethea might have gone with him for this one. She went with him, taking the Medici,
Marie de Medici.
Home. 1642, he accompanies Princess Mary to go to the Netherlands to marry William of Orange.
Gotcha. Later, Mary the Second.
Yes, William and Mary.
Yeah.
And
blimey, so they've got fingers in royal pies, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. Well connected. and intriguingly, though, well connected, but Catholic. He apparently joins the Church of England, but kind of primarily for show, it seems like.
Right,
but,
interesting.
She at some point is, what's the word, recusancy, but basically is accused of still being a Catholic.
Okay.
And so when we
recalcitrant.
Maybe that too. But when we get to the Civil War, they're actually both in the Netherlands when Civil War is clearly brewing, and as royalist Catholics, they go, no, we're just going to stay in the Netherlands.
Fair enough.
Kind of. So there you go.
Which is interesting because the Netherlands was also staunchly Protestant, but I suppose if it's not quite as volatile, you're not going to, you know.
Yes.
You're going to stay put, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And so their main London house was Arundel House, which was just off the Strand, where Arundel Street is nowadays.
Yeah.
And two kind of oddities we still have in Arundel Street. One is the entrance to the disused Strand / Aldwych Underground Station.
Yeah.
The other one is the Roman Bath, which Dickens swam in and various things, and Roman Bath, and it's not a Roman bath at all. But some people said, well, maybe the Earl of Arundel, Thomas Howard, I'm gonna stick with him as Arundel and her as Alethea.
Okay.
Name wise, I think. So because he collected lots of stuff, and he did collect, he gave a load of statues to the Ashmolean and things, that he might have collected a Roman bath, or he might have created a Roman bath, but actually, and there's another school of thought that says no, it's just a cistern to supply water to a fountain in Somerset House.
Oh, so it's quite small then. It's not huge.
No, apparently it might even have been the the support that held the water tank for the system is one possibility. So
it's not really a pool so much as it, or bath as much as it's like a plunge pool.
Yeah. Kind of it's a plunge pool. Yeah. Absolutely, it's only a plunge pool. but was definitely not Roman.
Right.
That was just a claim made later.
Love it.
But,
love
you it. Know, but we have some images of Arundel House, and we have some images seemingly from Arundel House, okay. because one of the people who worked for them and lived there was Wenceslas Holler.
Ah.
And he is known... his map of London is one of the maps that, as guides, there's one of the ones we sort of go to, it pops up as one of the sort of good early maps of London, actually from 1666. So it is immediately pre-Great Fire of London, and therefore quite an interesting, useful...
Quite handy, isn't it?
...map. Yeah, absolutely. But he also did a series of etchings or engravings or something, but they are named for the seasons, and each one of the seasons, and he might have done more than one series of them, I think, but it has a woman in the foreground, and then it has some kind of landscape behind.
Right.
And one of them seems like they're in Arundel House looking out. One of them seems to have, so spring seems to have Tart Hall in the background. So that might be the only kind of good image we've got of Tart Hall. Another one seems to be from Tart Hall, because what you can see in it is the old St. Paul's Cathedral and the banqueting house.
Gosh, could you see St. Paul's Cathedral from where Tart Hall was then?
Well,
or is it a bit of a?
It might be a artistic. It's an artistic.
Yeah, because I mean, you don't know once you take all the buildings away that we used to today. All the other stuff out of the way.
Well, exactly. That's the thing, and it's sort of tantalising. Like, really? Would that be what it is? But I think it's not. I think it's just there is a landscape, and in the landscape there are two buildings, and they are both recognisably those two buildings.
Gotcha.
As it were, so not necessarily accurate. But even if you didn't, I think we do know roughly when it was created, but even if we didn't, beautifully, that's something that an image that you could date to about 40 years, because it's after 1622 when Inigo Jones finishes the banqueting house, and it's before 1666 when the old St. Paul's goes. And she would have known the banqueting house because she performed there in one of the maybe more than one, but there's definitely one that I found a reference to of, it was supposed to be Christmas 1608. Actually, it was February 1609. Just, you know, another example of something not quite.
This is Charles I at this point, who was a big fan of the masks, wasn't he? Was it him?
Yes. Now, was it him or was it James? Still? Ooh. Ooh, hang on. Just nearby, I have my ruler of rulers.
Yay! Which is, gang, if you don't know this amazing thing, which us guys keep on hand, it is a ruler that you can use, you know, to rule
on one side,
stuff.
It's a ruler.
And on the other, it's got the British rulers on it. So it's the ruler of rulers, and it's very handy to have.
Very handy for dates. That's and it was indeed Charles I. So
he's quite big on
masks. No, hang on. James. Sorry, I'm mixing up the dates.
That
so
whole
James
lot
starts
quite big on masks,
1603.
Aren't they? James II, I think, is particularly big on it.
Well, so this is one of those things that if there was a point in history you could go back to, I would just love to go and watch a court mask in the banqueting house.
Yeah.
Written by Ben Jonson.
Ooh.
With scenery designed by Inigo Jones.
Nice. And
primarily for the scenery. So Inigo Jones brings theatrical scenery to England. Basically, the idea, you know, wings and backdrops and all of that. That starts with him. But not only that, for the masks, they were incredibly elaborate, like contraptions, almost like automata that kind of, you know, open up and things would be revealed and clouds would come out the top and people would appear and just amazing stuff that we've got kind of pictures of, but it would be so lovely to see it in the flesh.
So if anyone's not quite sure what a mask is, it's a sort of mix between a masquerade and a fantastically over-the-top theatre production. It's the kind of thing that we don't really know, well... we don't have anything that's like that now. So that's why it would be incredible to see, because imagine all of your bells and whistles, you know, your biggest sort of razzle dazzle West End show, and then add more, and then more bling, and more, and then all the, you know, the aristocrats coming in with masks and
it
all
seems
that kind of
to
stuff.
Be an excuse for aristocrats to dress up,
yeah,
and have fun.
And it's almost a bit performative theatre as well, because they sort of join in with it, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that quite often it is kind of representing events and things like that, but it's all about flattering the monarchs.
Yes.
That's the bottom line at any
blowing smoke. Occasion.
Yeah. And also dress up in fancy clothes, but also dress in not enough clothes. So they were often quite revealing costumes and things.
Quite a raunchy affair.
Yes. And so she performs in The Mask of Queens.
Okay.
In February 1609 at the Banqueting House. And I know nothing more about it than that.
Okay.
actually, it's not true. Alongside possibly one of her sisters, but certainly her cousin. And her cousin, who shares Bess of Hardwick as a maternal grandmother, was Arbella Stewart.
Ah, now someone else we've not mentioned, but who is also possibly worth
looking
chat.
Into more. So, well, maybe we should just leave it at that and come back to her another day. But she's someone who was imprisoned at the Tower of London that Alex and I possibly talk about. I don't talk about her that often.
I don't actually. I used to when we first started.
Yeah.
When I first qualified, but I don't really talk about her that much. She's one of the remaining ghosts, supposedly, in the Tower.
Yes. And it's a story that starts off quite kind of could be quite fun in some way. There's an element of saucy fun about it. Yeah. And then it all turns very grim. And So let's leave it at that. We might come back
We'll come back to her.
Yeah. So a few years after The Mask, Alethea goes travelling, and she goes to Italy with Inigo Jones.
Oh.
And Inigo Jones is the first classical architect we have in this country, and he actually went to Italy and he saw the Palladian buildings in the flesh, and he kind of brings Palladian architecture back to Britain. Mm. And,
the dates
have just occurred to me. You can see cogs working.
I can see so cogs went, going.
Huh. Yeah.
She went very quiet and then just a bit confused.
So the mask they did that I was just talking about, that can't have been in the banqueting house. Or it was in the old version of the banqueting house. You know, Elizabeth I's banqueting house. That by then someone described as a slight ill-built shed. So they knocked it down clearly and built what was then sort of 1620s is kind of the first classical building to be finished in London.
Okay, so she performed in the rubbish version.
In the rubbish version. In the pre So actually, but also, you know, she was there when the man who brought classical architecture to Britain was going to Italy. That's another sort of snapshot of moment in time that I feel that would be.
It's quite a changeable period, that, isn't it? In terms of, you know, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of stuff that's moving around a bit.
Yes. Yeah. Do you mean so like influences?
And just, you know, how just things like how society's looking and how London's looking. You know, there's a lot of different stuff coming in and different people. There's, you know, that century, what do we have? Four monarchs in that century?
Yeah.
Where's my ruler of rulers gone again? Hang on.
Four and a half, if you count Oliver Cromwell, kind of.
Well, we've got the end of Elizabeth I, you've got James I, you've got Charles I, you've got the Commonwealth, Ollie Cromie, you've got James II, you've got William and Mary as well. So actually, that's six/seven monarchs/rulers in a century. That's a lot of movement.
That's a lot, yeah. But it's also the point where we suddenly get interested in Europe. And, you know, European culture and the Renaissance and the antiquities and all of that. But start, you know, travelling to Europe and well, coming back with stuff, obviously, that we've kind of nicked.
Stealing stuff.
But, you know, it's a big shift in British ideas of style and fashion and culture and architecture and all of that. And, you know, it's right at the beginning of that. But she lived in Venice for a while.
Nice.
She stayed in Antwerp for a bit, maybe on the way to Venice. Her two of her sons were sent off to live in Padua, so she goes to visit them in Padua. Goes to Dublin, and there was a point. Some of this she was traveling with her husband, but some of it she was setting off on her own, and she was, or she was supposed to do something, and she was like, "Well, I'm not waiting to do that. I'm just gonna go." And was
brilliant.
Like at an era, a time when aristocratic ladies wouldn't necessarily be doing all that on their, I mean, with an entourage or whatever. I'm sure she didn't just set off on her own, but you know, it was notable how much she traveled. She was sort of described as having a mania for traveling.
that feels relatable.
Yes. And she, so her husband dies first. He dies in Padua. She was stays in the Netherlands. And again, another list of paintings. After she eventually died in the Netherlands, they did an inventory of her stuff. And it included 36 paintings by Titian, 16 by Giorgione, 19 by Tintoretto, 11 by Correggio, 17 by Veronese, 12 by Raffaello, and 5 by Da Vinci.
Oh my good grief.
So.
That is a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. But she didn't just spend the money on art. She was also quite interested in science. And
I like her.
She organised building Tart Hall. To be an Italianate villa like the one she'd seen in Italy, and it seems like she built it to be a sort of place of art and entertainment and culture and science as well. And there's some suggestion she was used it partly to do experiments in the style of kind of Francis Bacon, who and her father was a noted patron of sort of early scientists in a way, so it seems like she and her sister both very interested in things. And one of the things she did, kind of, I think from the early 1600s on, is she collected recipes. And some of them,
back to recipe books,
but it's more cures, it's medicinal recipes. And eventually, after she dies, a book is published called Natura Excentrata, or
easy for you to say.
If I could walk like that, I wouldn't need the talcum powder. I don't know why those two gags live together in my head. There you go.
Love it. Love it.
Nature Unboweled, attractively, is what it thinks. And it consists of 1,720 secrets digested into recipes or receipts, fitted for the cure of all sorts of infirmities.
Oh, brilliant. So it's a
herbal medicinal, and a lot of them are recipes that we probably wouldn't use nowadays, partly because we might not be able to get the ingredients. There's quite a bit of unicorn horn and things like that.
Amazing.
Some of them
famously tricky to get hold of.
Absolutely, yeah. Some of them kind of start with take 3 slugs, which is that's a cure for swollen eyes, which, I mean, I don't know how it carried on, but that itself is alarming.
That's madness.
One of the other ones, her sister also published a book of kind of remedies. And I can't remember which book this came from, but there was one that involves collecting 3 balls of horse dung, boiling them up in wine, straining it off, adding sugar, and then drinking it up. Yum, yum, yum.
Well, that sounds nice.
So, so again, let's call it a snapshot.
Old-timey people are mad. Yeah.
Yeah. But it wasn't published in her name. It was attributed to Philiatros, is the author. But on the page opposite the title page, there is a portrait of Aletheia. So it seems to make sense that it was from her. And it's published quite soon after she dies, possibly because it was seen, you know, thought unseemly or something to do it while she's alive, or maybe there's some disputes about her inheritance amongst her children things. So people were fighting over stuff. Maybe they thought, well, let's publish this now. And, you know, she also somewhere in it uses the word Nesh, which is a very, very Sheffield word. And she was Sheffield born in word. Sheffield. And actually, if you think about who the potential authors of this work could be, someone who knew lots of recipes and medicinal things and could quote the Latin, but would also use Nesh as a word, that really narrows it down. But it does mean that she's one of the first women to publish a scientific, technical, medical
wow
in this country.
That's really something,
which is quite extraordinary. And I at that point I was like, okay, now I want to find out more about what was in the book. And then the kind of easily available information runs out a bit. So actually, you know, apart from there's a few other people who've quoted bits from it and things like that, but I couldn't find, you know, I found an image of the front page, but not much more detail than that. So sort of tantalizingly, you know.
What year was that published?
1655.
Gosh, I mean, that for, you know, it's very rare for, like you say, for women to have scientific textbooks in the past as a general, but that's really quite early for
and
that.
It is sort of, I mean, it's mad to say it's the birth of modern science or whatever, because science has always just gradually gotten, but around about that era is the point where you get much more empirical studies being done and people actually testing whether things work or not. And maybe they didn't test all of these recipes.
Maybe not the slug one.
And the unicorn horn and whatever. But, well, you know, it's that era is gone again. It's the sort of, it feels like it's the beginning of modern Britain in lots of different ways. And science is one of those things. So it's weird that, you know, that just pops up almost as an afterthought on a long list of other things she did in her life. And it's like, oh, yeah, and this was published. Mm. And you're like, oh, OK, hang on. That's quite interesting in itself.
She's really, really accomplished, woman, isn't she?
And.
Because you often think about women of that era as just being the dutiful wife, the trophy wife, really. So doing even one thing, let alone several, is quite a.
And I said right at the beginning, I couldn't find any information about her character. But what I think you can work out is that she clearly knew her own mind, kind of, and did her own thing. And one of the reasons she, like, quite often lived apart from her husband, which, I mean, again, maybe in the higher noble. The more noble you get, the more likely people were to have different households and things. But she was quite clearly quite happy doing her own thing. And
good for her.
There is two different things I was thinking about there. The name survived. So one of her sons is Thomas, I think, Stafford, William Stafford. And so where Tart Hall was is now Stafford Place, which is...
So the Howard name disappears?
Maybe not. No, he's Viscount Stafford, this son. So children is that keeps the sort of Howard name going. But that thing of, you know, a lot of the street names of London tell us something about who used to own them or live there or whatever. And Stafford Place, absolutely. And if you know the area near Buckingham Palace, it's just opposite the other Palace Theatre, the relatively new theatre that's opened up there. Stafford Place goes up there. And it's sort of fairly modest buildings nowadays. It's almost muse houses and things. But that's where the house would have been. And again, I was trying to piece together. So she had six children. Three of them died in infancy. Two more predeceased her. So one of the six survived, you know, outlived her. Blimey. And that was William, Viscount Stafford.
Right.
Who, in 1680 is accused of being part of a plot to kill Charles II.
Oh no.
It's the Titus Oates plot, which again, I suddenly thought, oh, we talked about this. And I went, no, we didn't. We talked about Cato Street. But it's, again, this may be something we should come back to. But more or less, well, do you know?
I don't know.
It's one of those plots that I mix up with other plots.
I've heard the name, but I don't know exactly about it.
Maybe we should both go away and look into it more. So people are accused of plotting against Charles II when maybe they weren't, and 15 people are executed.
Yikes, that's a big one.
Convicted by Judge Jeffreys.
Oh, again, hanging Judge Jeffreys.
One of those other names, yeah, that crops up in various circumstances.
Funnily, so, another haunting. He haunts a pub in Wapping, doesn't he? Supposedly.
Oh, yeah, supposedly, yes. Her only surviving son at that point is possibly I don't know, I think innocent, but accused and executed. Clearly by then some of the other children had children. So the family does carry on. It doesn't stop with those.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's
so the other two that die as adults rather than kids.
I think so, yes. And either them or him. Have children first.
Gotcha.
So there is still a Duke of Norfolk and
keep
an
the bloodline alive, god
and,
damn it.
Yeah.
Right, so even though he's innocent, he's still convicted.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Which again makes me think, yep, I need to dig into that more. And so much of the stuff that I was reading, I was like, oh, okay. I need to go back and find out more about that. And I need to, and I was like, oh, no, hang on.
We're going to have to do a whole series just on this family.
Yeah. And then like all of it, every name that I read, I was like, oh, I know. So feels a bit like a sort of spider's web of connections.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of these aristocratic families, that's exactly what it is, isn't it? They all intermingle, let's say, in a...
Yeah. Yeah,
it's nicer way,
which is not necessarily a good thing.
No,
And it's not necessarily a good thing that we know more about them than the person who lived just next door to Tart Hall. But they have been written about, and having just started from what's that building all about? I was quite delighted when all of this unveiled, and I thought, well, look, it's a sequel.
Yeah.
You've had a few pods that have carried on a story, picked up
That's
a story
true.
Later on, haven't you? I think.
That's true.
The Koh-i-Noor.
Yeah, exactly.
Had more
did
than
that
one episode and things. So I thought, well, look, let's have a little sequel from last week.
All right.
Last fortnight.
Okay. Or do you want to then do a sequel of
Can we keep this running? I don't know. Is it OTV?
I mean, we can keep it running.
That would be a thing, actually. Pick out one thing from to pass right. the subject back and forth. However, we might end up in a dead end at some point.
We'll get more specialist. What we could do is, you're very good at these sorts of topics. Why don't we, when it's your week, you continue, we can have a Fiona series and I'll continue with random bits and pieces here, there and everywhere. What do you reckon, listeners? Let us know. What do you think? Do you want a bit of a series on this Howard family from Fiona?
Potentially, and, I can feel this getting... And there might be things that you get down to, you're like, well, these happen, but they're not very exciting.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I want to know about the Thomas Oates conspiracy thing. What did I say? Thomas Oates.
Thomas. Yeah, we've got a few potentials there. So okay,
yeah.
I can
a mini series at the very least. Let us know, listeners. Let us know what you
mini
think.
Series.
Do you want a bit of a Titus Oates scandal? And picking up a couple
the
of these threads from the we've
and
got
Bess,
our
Bella
Stewart,
Bess.
We can yeah, Bess of Hardwick as well.
Yeah.
Oh, let us know. Yeah. Cause I can carry on with the other bits and pieces and then we can sort of intersperse the Howard family dramas. Because, I mean, you know, that's the same family that Catherine Howard is a part of course.
Yes.
Not exactly the same branch, I would assume, but definitely the same lineage, bloodline,
same,
all that kind of
yes.
thing.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Intriguing.
Right,
wow,
okay.
thank
well,
you. That There we go. All right. Well, that's your task ahead of you. That's your topics covered. Now you don't have to think of anything. That's fine. Yeah. that was really interesting. So what is where Tart Hall was? What is there today, if anything?
Stafford Place.
Just Stafford Place. There's no particular houses. Building or...
There's no buildings left. No. Yeah. It... After the son was executed, they shut the gates and they never opened them again.
That is like Arendelle.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So they just sort of knocked everything down.
So and then eventually got knocked down, I think. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. The drama. Brilliant. Well, what an amazing direction to go off in, having spotted a curious little name on a map from last week.
Yeah. And do you know what? Thank you so much. Actually, the one thing I haven't done much of this summer is research into anything. Mm. And it's really nice to just go, okay, I'm just going to sit down and look this. Oh, and see where this goes. And oh,
it's lovely to go down those rabbit holes, isn't it?
Yeah.
And just go, oh, hang on a minute. It's when the penny drops and you go, oh, wait. That's a lot of fun. Yeah.
And I think it's my favourite noise when I'm guiding is when people go,
yeah.
that's the one that I love to hear.
The one that you crave.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. Fabulous. Well, thank you so much. Great. No, so you can have a look on the blog, gang, for some pictures.
There will be some pictures. Yep.
Looking forward to seeing that open-necked picture of Thomas Howard and Rubens.
And of course, you've all seen last week's blog, and I suspect, or last fortnight's blog. But, I mean, you must have been sitting there thinking to yourselves, Tart Hall, who would live at a place like that? So now I've answered it for you.
Now you know.
Yeah.
Now you know. Amazing. Thank you so much. Right. Well, is there anything to let everyone know before we head away?
No, I think.
Just get your tickets for Shrabani Basu's chat at the Imperial War Museum on the 6th of November. I'll be there, Fiona, maybe, once we figure out diaries.
Yep.
It starts at 6:15. Doors open at 6. Starts at 6:15. Live Q&A begins at 7 o'clock. There's a book signing and meeting, which, I mean, we're going to have to get involved in that. And then you can go and explore the Spies, Lies and Deception exhibition. Mm-hmm. So come along and I will be there. And you can either see me or avoid me, depending on how you feel. And interestingly, it's the talk, I believe, is going to be... they've got this sort of roof terrace in there, which is right, funnily enough, at the top of the building. It's enclosed, but it's got this amazing roof. And I sort of spotted it from below the other day and was like, oh, that looks amazing up there. And someone said, oh, that's the event space. And then I had a look and that's where it's going to be. So, exciting. Yay! All right, gang. Well, we'll see you in 2 weeks for another topic. Don't know what yet, but we'll have a think and come back to you.
Yeah. Yay. Have fun.
All right, lovelies. Bye. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.